As I said, it's a great honor to be able to be here today. This is my home church. Some of you know my mother, Violet, who is here, and my wife, Elaine, who is here regularly. Are we okay, Mike? Doesn't he have a great name for the guy who's running the sound system? Just wanted to say how wonderful it was to be here on Christmas Eve. It was just magical to see the fire here. Jerry Nyborg, I know, was instrumental in that fireplace. The unleashing of various gifts, just absolutely wonderful. I was once on staff here in this church. I was an associate pastor. I left here about 14 or 15 years ago after being here for 3 years. And I was called to a church, a farm church, sort of an anomaly, a thriving rural church about 45 minutes north of the Twin Cities, Princeton Carmel, rural area. Today it's pastored by Jason Hovis, a good friend of mine whom I was privileged to help hire while I was there. And Darren Olson was my predecessor there. And I went from here to there. But let me back up just for a moment and tell you that when I went through these 40-plus years of ministry, there came a time about 20 years in when I realized things were changing very, very quickly. The whole culture was changing, and we were moving from what was known as a Christian or Christianized or a Judeo-Christian ethic to what's called a post-Christian society. And people were not coming to the church the way they had been. I was called to a small little church. On the day I was installed, there were 39 of us in church. Two-thirds of the congregation had left just in a couple of years before I came. And I came to a church that was desperate. They said, "We can pay you for 6 months." And I said, "We're just going to have to pray our way through this and see what happens." And I was searching, and a couple of years into that ministry, I decided that I needed to get more education. I needed to understand what was going on, so I went off to Fuller Theological Seminary and studied church revitalization. It's in Pasadena, California. And as I studied there over the course of the next 9 years, which brought me right up to the time that I came here, over that next 9 years, I began to discover some things that I'd never really understood about what the church needed to be in this changing society. See, I had grown up in a culture where, because people just came, all we did was just church. We just ran programs, and now we were starting to see this decline of the church, and some churches are growing, and what are they doing differently than what we're doing? Is it because they're running better programs? Is it because they have more dynamic preaching? Is it because they have figured out how to promote the church, market the church? What does it take? How will the church survive at this crack in time? And so there I was at this church on the West Coast trying to figure this out, going to Fuller Theological Seminary, and then I came here to International Falls. Now, the thing that I discovered when I was at Fuller Seminary from all of my professors, one after another, was that my understanding of what church had been was no longer working, and that I needed to have a real new understanding of how to be a leader for the church in this Western world. As you know, the church in the Western world has been dwindling. I'm an interim pastor for 2 more weeks over in Warren, Minnesota. It's just tragic as I look around the community. We see in Warren absolutely beautiful edifices, wonderful buildings, some done in stone and brick, and they're down to 20 and 30 people. The Covenant Church over there is one of the thriving churches. It's emerging. Ryan Sorenpa, who was here on staff at this church, will become our pastor on February 1st. So I have 2 more times over in Warren, and then I'm going to be back home here in my home church. But one of my professors at Fuller Seminary said to us in one of our classes this very, very startling thing. He said, all of the people who were going to come to church already came. Man, what a statement. All the people who were going to come to church already came. So that meant then that as churches were growing, it wasn't because new people were coming to church. It was because, as they say, we were reshuffling the deck. People were leaving churches that were dying, dwindling, and coming to churches because they wanted to be part of something that felt alive to them. So what looks like church growth in America today really isn't statistically church growth. I'm not saying there are no places where people are not accepting Christ, but about 1% of the growth of the church every year is through conversion. All the rest is just sort of this mirage that we're looking at. The church is not growing at the rate of our population growth in America. So when I left here and went to Carmel Covenant Church, I went here realizing that there was an urgent need. And the thing that I had learned at Fuller Seminary was that it wasn't going to come, the growth of the church was not going to come through just running the best programs, having the best preaching, having the nicest facility, having the best marketing scheme. That the growth of the church was going to come when it really got back to what Jesus said the church was supposed to be about, which was to move outside the walls of the church and to begin to meet the needs of the people around us, because he called us to pay attention to the littlest and to the least and to the lost. Suffer the little children to come unto me, he said. And he said regarding the least, as you have done it unto the least of these. And regarding the lost, he said, for I have come to save the lost. So it must be emphasized again that churches that are going to grow at this crack in time, this new phase of history we are in, are congregations that have discovered they cannot be there only to serve themselves with an inward look. Churches that are going to survive are going to be reaching out and really actively making a difference in the lives of the people around them. Churches that will not do that are going to die, and the window before they die is going to be 20 to 30 years, according to what I learned at Fuller Seminary. And whoever thought that Kmart would close its doors 20 years ago? Whoever thought that some of these churches that were once thriving congregations would be down to 20 and 30 people? But it's happening. And the tragedy is not only that these churches are dying, it's that when a church that has become inward and only interested in serving its own needs dies, nobody out there even cares or notices. So I was laying on the couch one day over there in Carmel. It doesn't matter that I was laying on the couch. It's just that I remember the moment so clearly. And I was in prayer, and it was an urgent prayer. God, now you have trusted me to move from an associate role to a senior role, and I know that we have to turn our look outward, but I was in a very, very inwardly focused fourth-generation farm church. How are we going to do this? And I was laying there on the couch when the Holy Spirit clearly spoke to me very, very briefly, very, very clearly, very, very powerfully, and said, here are four events that I want you to develop in this congregation. The first one, I want you to call Summer's Day. He even gave names to these things. I want you to call it Summer's Day. The second one, I was at Carmel Covenant Church, is going to be called the Carmel Apple Fest. I want Summer's Day in the summer, the fall festival the fall, and the Apple Fest in the fall. I want you to develop Simply Christmas Eve. I want you to develop Simply Easter Morn. And I want every one of these events to take place outside the walls of the church. So that was the challenge. Summer's Day took place on our ball field and included a display of farm machinery. And because I'm serving a church right now over in Warren, let me tell you, farm machinery ain't what it was when I was a boy. I mean, I'm talking about farm machinery where you walked underneath the tractor and looked up. I mean, it's big stuff. So we had all of these implements there on one end of our ball field, and we had a classic car show in the parking lot. One of the ladies who had a buggy and horse said, I'd like to get buggy rides. We had a silent auction, an animal petting zoo. We had an art show. We even had paintball, and it was just absolutely wonderful. We organized games and craft events. We had a pulled pork meal. And then one of the things that we wanted all of these events to do would be to somehow lift up the name of Jesus so that an unchurched society, these people would be drawn to this event, would hear the good news of Jesus Christ. So we planned for an evening concert. We brought in a contemporary Christian band from out of state to be on a flatbed trailer appropriate to our farm setting and to do an evening concert. And on the Saturday of the event, I was sitting at a picnic table and eating my lunch, and I sensed a presence. And I looked, and here was a man about 50 years old, the most disheveled, the dirtiest appearing man you could imagine, who had pulled up on an old bicycle. And he said to me, "What's going on here?" And I said, "Well, this is a party for the neighborhood." And he said, "I'm from the neighborhood. I'm a farmhand. I work on a farm only a mile from here. Can I be here?" And I said, "Of course. This party is for." And he said, "Can I eat here?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I've got connections. I'll go get you a meal." And so I went over, and we had pulled pork. Doesn't that make you hungry about now? Pulled pork, potato chips, pickle. I mean, I shouldn't do that to you. Scott's going, "Yeah, yeah." And so I went and got this meal, and I brought it over, and I found out that this man's name was Kenny. Always and only Kenny. Never Ken, never Kenneth, because he was developmentally disabled. And I don't know, I'm not an expert on these things, but I would project that his IQ was maybe 50 or so. So there was Kenny, hungry and eating ravenously. And I mean, God has spoken to me through his Spirit about outreach events, and here suddenly this guy is here. And so in the course of our little conversation, I said, "Would you like to come to church?" He said, "Yeah, what time is church tomorrow?" So I invited him. And you know, I have found through the years that we often don't know what we're getting into when we do outreach ministry. And it even says in Hebrews 13, "Show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." And I have to say, when Kenny showed up for church the next day, I was pretty sure he was not an angel, because he was wearing the same clothes. He was just as dirty as he had been before. And the greeters came and found me, and they said, "Pastor Allen, you got to come to the door." And I said, "What's going on?" They said, "Some guy just came in, and we think he needs benevolence." They had no idea that he had been there the day before and that he had actually come to worship. Well, I came, and he knew me, and I knew him, and I, with people watching, brought him into the sanctuary, and we found a spot for him to sit. And some people didn't know what to do with Kenny. How do you treat a man who's so filthy and who's developmentally slow? And I knew how to treat him. Not because I was an expert, but because I had read ahead. And I had read what James chapter 2 says. It says, "If a man with gold rings and in fine clothing comes into your assembly, and a poor man in shabby clothing also comes in, and you pay attention to the one who wears the fine clothing and say, 'Have a seat here, please.'" What? No, that's not how you say it. You say, "Have a seat here, please." And then a poor man comes in, and you say to the poor man, "Stand there," or "Sit at my feet." "Have you not made distinctions among yourselves and become judges with evil thoughts?" So I found out where Kenny lived, and I went over that week to make my first of many visits. He was living in a small, dilapidated trailer. It was probably about from here to the wall over there. And we stood out in the yard and visited for a while, and then he asked me if I'd like to come in, and I did. And when I came into the trailer, it was just an unbelievable change of environment. I came into the back door over there, and there was an old boxy wood stove, a rickety old dilapidated table with just two chairs. That was the only furniture that was there. And over here was a pile of clothing and bedding. And when I say a pile of clothing and bedding, dirty clothing and bedding, I mean this was like put on your rubber gloves caliber dirty clothing and bedding. And then we walked into the bathroom. I won't even describe it. He had no running water. All he had was a hose coming in from outside. And whenever he needed water, he just dragged the hose around through the house to deliver it to the kitchen or I would like to say to the shower, but that would not be true. He didn't take showers. It was unbelievable, the conditions that I found. And there was a hole near the front door where I'm pretty sure raccoons would come and go. And it was just an absolute squalor, a trailer unfit for human habitation. 1 mile from our church. And there was Kenny with this very, very low IQ who was happy to show me around because for him, it was home. Several visits later, I finally met the farmer and discovered that he had known Kenny's parents and he knew Kenny when he was a boy. So when the parents had died, this farmer and his wife had convinced themselves that by bringing Kenny onto the farm, they could do Kenny a favor. But let me tell you, Kenny was doing them quite a favor too. He was living in this absolutely horrendous, unfit for habitation trailer. And in exchange for that, he was doing all of the backbreaking work that the farmer couldn't do with his fancy machinery. He was the one who worked with the cows, the pigs, and the geese. He did the butchering. He split all the firewood. He built the fences. He was the one who went and picked rocks in the field. Anything the farmer didn't want to do, Kenny was doing. And in our conversation with the farmer, after I'd met the farmer, I said to him, you know, I was in the trailer. And he said, yeah. And I said, have you been in there lately? And he said, well, it's been a while since I've been there. And I said, it's really in bad condition. And he said to me, well, it wasn't that way when Kenny came. But he doesn't take care of anything. And I'm just through fixing things and trying to maintain it. He doesn't care. He doesn't know the difference anyway. This concerning Kenny, who had an IQ of maybe around 50. Well, Kenny liked church. And he came the next week still dressed the same way. He became a regular at church. And when we announced that we were going to be working in our community garden, we had a huge garden at that rural church. It was the size of a football field. Kenny showed up. He came on his bike. And what a worker he was. I mean, we were pulling weeds the first night he came. Could he ever pull weeds? And the next time we worked in the garden, Kenny was there again. He just kept coming to worship, though there were stirrings among some people of the church who would tell me that Kenny smelled bad and they didn't want to sit by him. And they were right. He smelled terrible. But on a Sunday morning, we opened up our worship time to sharing. And we would do this sometimes before prayer. And Kenny's hand went up. And I was the one leading that prayer time. And so I called on him. And he said, I just want to say thank you to everybody for letting me be part of your church. And I want you to know that I went to Sunday school when I was a little boy. And I'm coming back to Jesus. As I said, it was too much for some people. One day, a carload from our congregation pulled up alongside him along the road. And they said to Kenny, out the window of the car, if you don't stop coming to church, we're calling the sheriff on you. You know, as I told you, we were a congregation 4 generations deep. And these people were only responding in a way that made sense to them. They had grown up and had passed on from one generation to next the idea that the church was theirs. They'd been putting the money into the offering plate. They'd been the ones who had been serving on committees and boards. It was their church. If you don't stop coming to our church, we're calling the sheriff. And yes, I was upset, but then I remembered the time that Elaine and I went to a minister's retreat out in Montana, and at the beginning of that pastor's retreat, we were asked to share, and I was serving the church in Bemidji at the time, And we were supposed to give just like a 5-minute synopsis at the beginning of the retreat. So I told the people about my church in Bemidji, and I told them about my ministry there and what was going on. And during one of the breaks, one of the really mature pastors who I looked up to so much very, very gently took me aside, and he said, "Alan," he said, "I just need to point out that I have a problem with how you were speaking to the group." And I said, "Well, what?" He said, "You called it your church." He said, "I need to remind you, it's not your church. It's God's. And you talked about your ministry. And there too, I need to tell you, it's not your ministry. It's the ministry God has entrusted to you, through you, but it's his ministry." Oh, man. I was not offended. I was enlightened. And I have tried ever since then to always speak about the church where I pastor as being God's church, the place where I serve. It makes a difference. So I understood these people who thought they owned the church, but it was God's church. Kenny was liking church more and more, and he showed up one Sunday wearing a new suit. It was funny in a way, except that it was serious on his part, but he showed up in church wearing a tuxedo. And he had gotten it at a thrift store. He told me he paid $10 for it. And so for one golden Sunday, Kenny was the best dressed man in the house. And I'm sure the people at the thrift store said, "Wow, are we ever glad to get rid of that tuxedo?" And, you know, people began to open their hearts to Kenny. And some people, and I see giftedness. And gifting is so important in the body of Christ. You know, when I was here on Christmas Eve and I saw all of this, I didn't see decoration. I saw gifting. I thought, here's a congregation where the artists are free to use and expand their gifts. Wow! And when I heard the music, I didn't hear, you know, musicians. I heard giftedness. And so at Carmel Covenant Church, the people who had, say, a gift of mercy came to me and they said, "We've got to do something to help." So all of these people decided they would go over to the trailer, and with Kenny's permission, they went in. And like with rubber gloves, they bagged up this foul clothing and bedding. And he was using just a sleeping bag on a dirty mattress. And you know, we took all of that, that group of people with this gift of mercy, to the laundromat and washed all of his clothes. Some of the ladies stayed and kind of did as much as they could to clean up the trailer. Some people bought some basic supplies to go into his kitchen, a few pots and pans and some food. We as a church even provided access for Kenny, not there on that site, but not too far away, where he could go and take a hot shower. But winter was coming, and I knew in my mind that the clock was ticking, that garden hose was not going to be Kenny's answer for the winter months. And we were going to have to do something about it. But what was initially just concern, we've got to take some action here, became absolute alarm. When I went over to see Kenny one day, and he invited me in, and I was standing with him in the kitchen. I don't remember what he was doing, but I glanced down at his cast iron frying pan on the stove. And there were, you know, residues of the meal from the night before there. And it was just covered with mouse droppings. Oh, this cannot go on. And I drove directly from Kenny's house in the country into town, and I went to social services. And I told him what I had seen, the mouse droppings, that was enough to get them out there within days. And they went to the farmer, and they said, "We've been over, we've inspected the situation, and he cannot continue to live under these conditions. You either have to bring this up to, code, or we're going to have to find some alternative housing for him." Oh, Man, was he angry. Absolutely furious. And you know who he was angry with? He wasn't angry with social services. He was angry with the person who had gone to social services. My name was absolute mud in his mind. And he began to spread throughout the whole neighborhood that pastor and that church were meddling. And he said, my wife and I took Kenny in, and we are the only friends Kenny has, which was no longer true, right? Now we had become his friends. And he's just lucky that he has a place to live. And we knew that wasn't true either. Living there in that trailer was about the most unlucky thing that was happening in Kenny's life. So there was that critique that was happening and filtering through the community. Then one Sunday, my wife, Elaine, who's here in the white sweater, you know, she came to me and she said, did you put my dress somewhere? And I asked, what dress? And she said, well, she described it, and I knew which dress, and she said, I don't know what happened to it. She put on a different dress. We went to church. Next week, she came to me. Now it wasn't wondering. Now it was absolute fear. She said, I took a note of what dresses I had last week because I couldn't find that dress. She said, 4 or 5 more of my dresses are missing. And so we started locking the doors like when we would go out and work in our yard. And we were scared, and we went off to church on a Sunday morning, and I remember coming back and finding a window broken. So immediately we did what we thought we needed to do. We called the sheriff. Somebody had threatened to call the sheriff. I actually called the sheriff. He came out right away, and it had just rained the night before, and he started looking around the premises, and he said to me, I see there's a track, a very clear track down the gravel driveway. I'm going to follow it and see where it goes. I didn't go with him. He went alone. It was a bicycle track. And he followed it for a mile. And sure enough, it went right into Kenny's yard. And the sheriff confronted him. And Kenny admitted what he had done. He was the thief. He had stolen those dresses. And the sheriff came back over to our house. And he said, do you want to press charges? And I said, absolutely not. Instead, I drove over to Kenny's, and he and I went for a long walk across the cow pasture. And as we walked, he began to share with me about how much he missed his mother. And Elaine had invited Kenny over, and we had shared a meal at least once, maybe twice. Kenny had been over. And he said, the way she was so tender and kind reminded me of my mother. And I wanted those dresses. I liked the way they felt because I wanted to be close to her, to his mother. And so, you know, he was a big man. Elaine's not very big. Those dresses were absolutely ruined. But as we came back to the trailer, we stood out there, and Kenny began to weep. And he said, I'm so sorry. I know what I've done is wrong. I never should have done this. And I stood there and decided, just wrap my arms around him, and I said, Kenny, I want you to know that Elaine and I totally, 100%, absolutely forgive you. But I said, here's a better thing. God has forgiven you too. And I wasn't just making that up, because I had also read ahead, and it said, if we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us our sins and cleanse us from all unrighteousness. So Kenny received our forgiveness, and he received God's forgiveness. And it was just a kind of a great closing moment to this very dramatic event. Well, the wheels were turning quickly now. Social services had been there. The sheriff had been there. And it wasn't very long. I don't remember the exact precise time frame when we received notification that Kenny now had been relocated. They had found a group home for him in another town some distance, and we may never see Kenny anymore, but he was in a much, much better place. So God is merciful, and he gives all kinds of new beginnings. And here I was, lying on the couch, desperately praying and asking God to intervene for some new beginning for Carmel Covenant Church. And he said, here's your new beginning. Do outreach. And it led us to Kenny. And we could have fallen into this idea that we had done Kenny a great favor. But what has come to my understanding over the years of reflecting on this is that it's possible that we were not sent to Kenny, but that Kenny was sent to us. Because I read in Matthew 24:25, it says, who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. It will be good for that congregation whose master finds that congregation so doing when he returns. So that was the first lesson that I learned from Kenny about outreach. And the second lesson I learned is also framed by a question. It came to me later on. What if Kenny is Jesus? Now, I don't mean the Jesus. I know about the Jesus. But what if Kenny was there representing somehow the presence of Christ? For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. And then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you? The king will reply, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. What if Kenny is Jesus? Do we have enough time to listen to a song? Do we have time? All right. We're going to listen to a song. I came across an incredible singer. His name is Gregory Porter. He wears a head dress. That's because of a scalp condition, so don't let that throw you. The words are printed on the backside of your bulletin. Let's enjoy this as this becomes part of this message in a way that I think is an appropriate closing.
Take me to the alley. Take me to the afflicted ones. Take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, rest here in my garden, you will have a pardon, you will have a pardon. Take me to the alley, the afflicted ones, take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, take me to the afflicted one, take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way. Let them hear me say, rest here, lonely one, hungry one, tired one, rest here in my garden.